this is Dr. Jay Davidson from drjdavidson.com. Thank you for joining me on the Viral and Retroviral Summit. My guest today is my good friend, Dr. David Jockers, and we're going to be exploring autophagy and the immune system. But before we do, a little bit about Dr. Jockers. Dr. David Jockers is a doctor of natural medicine, a functional nutritionist, and corrective care chiropractor. He currently owns and operates Exodus Health Center in Kennesaw, Georgia, and runs one of the hottest natural health websites in drjockers.com, which you definitely have to check that out, with over 1 million monthly visitors. And his work has been seen on popular media such as Dr. Oz Show. Dr. Jockers is a world-renowned expert in the area of ketosis, fasting, and the ketogenic diet. He is the developer and the bestseller of Navigating the Ketogenic Diet e-course and the host of the popular Keto Edge Summit and the Fasting Transformation Summit. Dr. Jockers is also a sought-after speaker around the country on such topics as ketosis, weight loss, brain health, healing leaky gut, thyroid function, natural detoxification, and disease prevention. Dr. Jockers, welcome to the summit.
Dr. J, always great to be on. It's an honor to be a part of this whole summit and everything that you're doing.
Well, I just appreciate you being on this interview. I know you personally, and you have a heart of gold. I mean, you will literally give clothes off your back to somebody if they are in need. And I just want to make sure the listener knows that, because you just have a really big heart. So really appreciate your time. The first word that catches my, attention and probably a listener is autophagy, or some people say autophagy. I mean, let's dive into that, because I don't want to confuse people here.
Absolutely. Autophagy is a really interesting concept because it's basically self-healing. And you and I, we got our classical training in chiropractic. And one of the things that gravitated me to the chiropractic field, chiropractic profession, was this idea that the body heals itself, that if we have a cut on our arm, that, in a sense, that cut heals itself. It's not the Band-Aid that heals it. We don't need to put anything on it necessarily. It's going to heal over. And so the body has these incredible innate healing mechanisms. And autophagy means basically self-eating. That's basically what it means. And it's actually where a part of the cell, there's certain genetic pathways that get triggered, and part of the cell actually will eat the other part of the cell. It'll eat some of the organelles. So just like within our body, we have organs. We have a heart, we have a liver, we have intestines. These are all organs. Within every cell, we have something called organelles. And those organelles, if you're the listener remembers back to biology class, you've got mitochondria, you've got DNA, RNA, you've got the Golgi apparatus, all these types of things. And so these organelles become damaged over time due to oxidative stress. It's just a normal process of metabolism where all of these organelles are basically withstanding stress. And over time, just like our bodies, we get older. The cool thing is our body will actually take down, when we create the right environment for autophagy, the body will break down the older organelles, older mitochondria, for example, and actually reuse the materials to rebuild new, healthier, stronger, more stress-resilient mitochondria. It's self-recycling, in a sense. It's trading in the old for the new. And, it's amazing how that works, but this is really the body's innate way of healing and regenerating itself. And, scientists are just starting to really get into this. In fact, the Nobel Prize in 2016 went to a Japanese researcher, and the whole topic was on autophagy and his discoveries around autophagy.
So essentially it's a way the body can identify, these cells or these tissues are older. It's time to not let them continue on anymore. We're going to basically end that cell's life, cell death, and then we're going to clean it up. And now we're going to create a new cell in place.
Yeah. So there is a little bit of different in some ways. Yes. So we've got two things. We've got autophagy, which is initiated within a cell. And we've got another process called apoptosis, cellular apoptosis. And cellular apoptosis is when the cell is dividing out of control, when it's an abnormal functioning cell. We've got certain security genes like the P53 gene that get triggered, And it basically tells the body, okay, destroy the cell. And sometimes the macrophages, part of the immune system, will go in and destroy it. Autophagy itself is actually a recycling system within the within the cell itself. So the cell doesn't necessarily die, but it just regenerates and makes itself new. And the interesting thing is it takes more energy to go through the process of apoptosis. And it actually creates more metabolic waste when we do that, as opposed to this autophagy process. It actually conserves us energy to recycle the components within the cell than it does to create new cells, in a sense, if that makes sense. And so autophagy, we need both processes. We need, you know, a really good apoptotic system and a good check and balance system, good security guard of the cell, so we can basically eliminate abnormal cells before they develop out of control. We also need good autophagy mechanisms where basically we're regenerating and recycling cells on a consistent basis, keeping them new and fresh. So it's interesting how those things work, and they work hand in hand. And you know, when we create the right environment to help promote those, it's one of the best things we can do for our immune system for preventing chronic disease. And I know, you know, this whole summit's about viruses and retroviruses, and I think it's just an innate way the body helps eliminate these retroviruses and viruses.
So thank you for that explanation and clarification. Are you saying, or do you feel that the average or the typical chronic illness case, then they don't have enough autophagy? Or is there where you have too much?
You definitely can have too much. It's absolutely a balanced system. So we have basically genetic pathways that have to do with building, right? Building up cells, cell reproduction. And so one of the genetic pathways associated with that is mTOR, mammalian target of rapamycin. Really important, especially if we want to be strong human beings, right? Very, very strong, stress resilient. We need to be stimulating that. But at the same time, if we overstimulate that, we reproduce cells too quickly. We promote inflammation. Cells don't recycle themselves. So it needs to be balanced with this autophagy process. And so we need that balance. When somebody is having too much autophagy, typically it's because they either don't have access to food, like you might see people in third world countries who are literally starving to death, right? That is too much autophagy. Their body's just breaking itself down. They don't have any muscle mass. They're weak, extremely nutrient deprived. You also have people that maybe are on a calorie restricted diet for a long period of time. Like you, for example, you know, people in Nazi Germany, right? So in the war camps, oftentimes in war camps, people are on a very, you know, they're given, you know, a piece of bread a day or something like that. So they might only have a few hundred calories. Definitely not enough to meet their metabolic needs. And they might be like that for months at a time. And so these people just waste away and are put under a lot of stress as well. Exercise stimulates autophagy. Calorie restriction stimulates autophagy. So if you get too much of those things, your body breaks itself down. Let's say you're a woman and you're dieting, or really a man as well. But I think I noticed that it affects women more. So let's say you're a woman and you're like, okay, I want to lose 20 pounds. I'm going to exercise for 2 hours every single day, and I'm going to eat 1,000 calories a day. Okay. And you start doing that immediately, you know, the weight starts coming off, you're feeling good. And then after about a week, you feel horrible. And, you know, basically you've overstimulated these autophagy processes, and now you don't have the raw materials to fully repair. And so that would be an example of too much autophagy, too much, you know, cell breakdown on the system. However, most people in our society, because food is so prevalent and it's so easy to overeat in our society, and, you know, a lot of people are not moving either, not moving their body well, have too little autophagy. And so most chronic disease is related to too little autophagy. And so we actually want to be more intentional about doing things to help stimulate autophagy.
So essentially, mTOR is growth and cells growing and building, and then autophagy essentially is kind of the cleanup of debris and making sure the cells are healthier. So if you get stuck in mTOR, then you age faster because you're not getting that recycling and kind of remaking. And if you get stuck in autophagy, then you're not getting enough growth built in. Is that a good way to say it?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, it's kind of like, you know, we've got we've got trash in our home, in a sense. And so autophagy helps take out the trash or the recycling, and basically, you know, that helps rebuild the cell, cleans up the environment, a lot of benefits to that. Now, we could say, well, we just won't use anything that relates to trash, and then our quality of life suffers, okay? So that's one way we could do it, and that would be like mTOR, you know, in a sense. It's like, okay, we're not going to try to stimulate mTOR, and then we're going to have issues. No, of course, we need to be living our lives, right? Of course, we're going to end up creating trash as part of our lives. We just need a process to take that trash out, okay? So we live our lives as long as we're, you know, taking the trash out, taking the recycling out. It's kind of this self-renewal system, keeps our house very, very clean. It's like that within the cell. We need this process of metabolism to create, to build cells, to create oxidative stress, which actually makes us stronger and more resilient. But at the same time, we also need processes to help clean up, you know, any of the debris or the damage that's done by that oxidative stress.
So I remember interviewing Dr. Bob Miller, and that was like the first moment that mTOR actually made sense, because I, you know, heard people like yourself and Dr. McCullough and these people like mTOR, and I'm like, and then, you know, you say the whole word, it's like, okay, that definitely loses me. But it clicked of, you know, certain things that basically turn mTOR on, and then certain things that essentially turn autophagy on. Is that it? Yeah. And is there, and I want to get into what those are, is there really like an ideal amount of, okay, when you're a kid, really you want a lot more mTOR than autophagy. When you're an adult, you actually want balanced, or you actually want more autophagy than mTOR, like in a 7 days in a week. Do you have a thought or preference?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously it's going to be slightly variable for everybody because they're all unique, but absolutely kids are growing really, really fast. Newborn babies growing really fast. Pregnant women, right? These are all stages where we want to be building. And so we need more of that mTOR process during that period of time. However, as we get older, we kind of finish our growth. We actually want a little bit more. We want to tip the scales to a little bit more autophagy during that period of time. And so basically there are certain things that activate mTOR, the mTOR pathways. That would be like high carbohydrate or high protein diet. So if you were to consume a meal that either had a lot of carbohydrates or a lot of protein, then that's going to stimulate mTOR. Or even just taking a supplement with a lot of branched chain amino acids in it, like a lot of bodybuilders or people who want to put on muscle tissue will take branched chain amino acids. I even do that, but I do it strategically at a strategic time because it's so good for helping rebuild muscle tissue, gives you greater strength, resiliency, and it's an activator of the mTOR pathway. Then you've got things that activate the AMPK pathway, or these would be things that inhibit mTOR and activate autophagy. And that would be things like fasting, whether it's intermittent fasting or doing an extended fast or a partial fast, particularly a partial fast that's low in carbohydrates, low in protein. So that would be something like, you know, there's something called a fasting mimicking diet, for example, FMD, that is like 800 to 1100 calories a day for 5 days. So not extended, but for 5 day period of time, it's low in protein, low in carbohydrates. So it helps stimulate this autophagy process. That would be an example of a partial fast. You could also do like a green juice fast or something like that to help stimulate that. So those are things that help. And then there are also exercise helps stimulate autophagy. In fact, exercise is a great balancer between autophagy and mTOR when it's done appropriately. If you overtrain your body, obviously, you're doing too much exercise and you can't adapt, then that's going to overstimulate the autophagy process. You're not going to get the best of both, right? You're just going to break down. You're going to become very catabolic. And then there's herbs, actually, believe it or not, that help. Things like green tea. Caffeine itself helps stimulate autophagy when taken in the right amount, right? Just like with everything, there's always a, you know, balance, tolerance mode. Resveratrol is a great assist for that. Curcumin in, you know, the active ingredient in turmeric has been shown to help activate the autophagy processes in the body. So these are just some examples. Quercetin would be another one of things people can be doing. So you can drink teas like green tea, for example, or, you know, turmeric, ginger tea or something like that, which, you know, can really help activate autophagy. You can also do things like intermittent fasting. So like, for example, what I'll do is I will do an intermittent fast. Like today I did an 18-hour fast. So I finished dinner at 6 p.m. yesterday, and then I didn't eat anything. I had a little bit of black coffee, and I also had a fasting tea, a tea with a whole bunch of different autophagy activating herbs this morning. And then I worked out at around 12 o'clock. So it was 18 hours. And then I had my lunch shortly after that. And right before I ate lunch, I had branched chain amino acids. And so that was, you know, roughly 1 o'clock. So it was like a 19 hour fast. Plus I worked out right before, like at the end of my fasting window, which really ramped up autophagy in my body. And in a sense, it like, it's like a slinky, like priming the mTOR pathway. And then when I add in the branched chain amino acids and I eat, you know, good nutritious food, then boom, I spring that mTOR pathway. And now my body right now is in building mode, right? So now I'm like building muscle tissue, adapting from the exercise. And then I'll eat one more meal, probably around 5:30 today. So in like a 4 to 6 hour eating window, right, which works great for my body. And then I'll fast again for another, you know, 18 hours or so, something along those lines. So this is a great way to balance out and get the best benefits of autophagy as well as mTOR. And you can also do things like extended fasting from time to time, which I do, like a 5-day fast, maybe once or twice a year, to help stimulate more autophagy. And if, you know, you have a chronic disease state, you might end up, or you want to lose a lot of weight or something like that, you might end up doing a little bit more extended fasting to help stimulate more autophagy, more cell cleanup, and literally, you know, rebuild your body, you know, cell by cell.
So if somebody has a chronic infection, then they want to favor autophagy over mTOR, because the autophagy is essentially when it's going to activate the immune system to go after these pathogens?
Yeah, exactly. So basically, when you have a chronic infection, it's already wearing down on the immune system. And then, believe it or not, eating itself, the act of eating, actually promotes inflammatory pathways, blunts your body's ability to really express a healthy immune response, even if you're eating anti-inflammatory foods. Now, I'm not saying that to say we can't eat. Obviously, we need to be eating. We just need to do it intelligently and strategically. So depending on the individual, obviously everybody's a little bit different. Some people are so metabolically damaged that, you know, starting to do an 18-hour fast like I was talking about would be like them going out, you know, somebody going out who had never exercised and all of a sudden trying to run a 10K, you know, they're going to be blasted. You know, they're going to overwhelm their system and it's not going to be healthy for them. So I'll tell people to start, especially those individuals that, you know, have a chronic infection. They're very lean, no energy, hypoglycemic, where they get dizzy between meals. Just start with 12 hours between your last meal and your first meal. Just that's it. So you finish dinner at, let's say, 6 p.m. You wouldn't eat anything with calories till 6 a.m. the next day. And when you wake up in the morning, you start your day and you drink 16 ounces of water before you can eat anything. You've got to get 16 ounces of water down. All of us, we're all dehydrated when we wake up because we're breathing out water vapor. So we want to replenish the hydration. It's so important. What a lot of people notice is they actually just feel like they have more energy. They're not hungry. They feel better. And I say, okay, drink the 16 ounces and then just wait till you're hungry, you know? And then that's when you break your fast. And I think that's a really great strategy for somebody that is metabolically damaged. And I know you deal with a lot of people with chronic infections that have been going on for a long time that might have a lot of metabolic damage and not be able to fast for long periods of time. And so we got to take it step by step. And that's a great place to start. And then we can start to extend the fasting period over time. Because the body, when you give it microdoses of stress, the body will adapt and get stronger. Okay. This is why, like, if you're, you know, if you ever sprain an ankle, break a leg, something along those lines, you know, you don't go out and start, you know, doing heavy squats right away, but you do rehab. And you rehab it, and over time it gets stronger and stronger and stronger, and eventually you're able to walk and run and do all the things you wanted to do again. So over time you start to, again, build that level of metabolic resilience. And the key is to do it slowly when you've got some sort of infection, and you definitely want to help improve that, those autophagy processes.
I love this conversation. So I want to pick your brain a little bit, because I've been thinking, okay, so muscle typically, when somebody has chronic illness, gets broken down to get the amino acids to then activate the immune system. And I feel like you see so many people that are chronically ill, chronic infection, they're just, you know, they're not overweight, or maybe they're overweight, but there's not a lot of muscle mass. Like the body just kind of has, you know, used up the muscle mass. So mTOR would essentially be thinking of like strength training and muscle building and protein, dairy, and glucose consumption. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
And then autophagy is more of the intermittent fasting, you know, vitamin D, berberine, resveratrol, green tea, those things. Yeah. Aerobic exercise, you know, will trigger that as well too. And then that's the pathogen cleanup. If somebody has chronic infection, do you want to have maybe 5 days of autophagy built in and 2 days where you're really trying to actually gain muscle mass to activate the immune system in that way? Or what's your thoughts on it? Or is it every day, like you have some autophagy built in, you have some mTOR? Does it take a while for those to switch on and off?
Yeah, so I like to start with a daily process, okay? And the whole goal is really improving your metabolic flexibility. Your metabolic flexibility is your ability to switch between burning sugar and burning fat for fuel. So most of us are in sugar burning mode. That is, you know, in a sense, the oldest pathway. And it's what keeps us alive. It's what allows us to, you know, fight or flight, right? When we're in fight or flight, stress response, it's this glucose pathway. So glycolytic pathway. And as opposed to fasting, when we're fasting, our body starts breaking down our own body fat and using that for fuel. And we want to have the metabolic flexibility to where we can go long periods of time without food. But again, just like we talked about, these metabolically damaged people, not able to do that oftentimes. And so we start by just slowly trying to improve that by making sure the food they consume is really good, by making sure we're doing things to help support their adrenals or the brain adrenal communication processes. Really trying to focus on improving sleep quality, things that are going to allow them to adapt to stress more effectively. Meanwhile, we continue to kind of push micro doses, not a big macro push to the metabolic system, but micro doses where we're extending that fasting window just a little bit at a time. And then we may do some things like crescendo fasting, where we might do 3 days a week where we try a 16-hour fast, 8-hour eating window, and see how they do with that. Okay. And then, you know, from there we can build to the next. I personally typically don't have somebody do an extended fast till I feel like they can do a 24-hour fast and it's, you know, not a big issue, right? Like they do a 24-hour fast and yeah, I mean, it's may not be the most comfortable experience for them, but it's not like, you know, they can get out of bed. Right? They don't have a headache all day. They're not, you know, they can go out and drive a car if they need to. So we want to start to improve that metabolic flexibility. I think that's the first thing. And then from there, we can play around with tightening the eating window, right? Because basically, I call it the building and the cleansing phase. So the building phase is a time between our first meal of the day and our last meal. So for me today, it's like 1 o'clock to 6 o'clock. So it's like a 5-hour eating window. And then from 6 o'clock to 1 o'clock the next day is my cleansing window. So during that period of time, basically my body's moving more into that autophagy dominant state as opposed to the, mTOR building dominant state. And so we start to cycle with that with intermittent fasting. Okay. And we might do a little bit of, carb cycling, or we may increase the amount of carbohydrates or protein, 1 or 2 days a week, depending on the individual, right? And kind of play around with that. So part of it is really discovering what your body needs from a metabolic perspective, because everybody's a little bit different. Some people can do great on a very low carb intermittent fasting strategy once they build the metabolic flexibility to handle it. And they can stay in that state for a really long period of time. Other people need to continuously ramp up a little bit more of the mTOR insulin pathway several times a week, sometimes every day, right? For maybe a 1 hour period every day, ramp that up. And that would be like something we'll call carb backloading, for example, where we may have a low carb or fasting window during the day. And then in the evening at some point, ideally earlier if better, we'll have, you know, a feast meal, like a very large meal, more carbohydrates in that, more protein. And, you know, basically that helps amplify or, you know, kind of like we talked about, that slinky really helps to amplify that mTOR pathway, the insulin pathway. And that can help be very supportive to the adrenals, the thyroid function, and just the overall building process, maintaining lean body mass.
So your building phase is triggering mTOR and your cleansing is essentially triggering autophagy?
That's right.
Okay. Yep. That makes sense. Yep. Do you have any, so when I look at like mTOR triggering, the B vitamin folate will trigger mTOR. So if somebody's fasting, do you want to stay away from like having a folate supplement in the morning? Because essentially, I guess if you're fasting, you're trying to trigger autophagy, but then something like a simple B vitamin could actually trigger mTOR?
Yeah, for sure. So typically with nutrients, okay, for most vitamins, vitamin C is one that you can take in a sense while you're fasting. But in general, I like adaptogens when you're fasting. Adaptogens like ashwagandha, holy basil, rhodiola, things like that can be very supportive, right, for your HPA axis. That can be really good. But in general, just your key nutrients, vitamin D. Vitamin D absorbs best with food. Folate, like all your B vitamins, things like that. I'm usually putting those in during an eating window. Okay, that's going to be key during the eating window. So iron, zinc, different things like that, all typically absorb best with meals anyways. And so we usually want to do those with the eating window.
Okay. Because I know there's not too, I mean, protein or amino acids, like you said, triggers mTOR, sugar, glucose triggers mTOR. So that's, is that where a lot of the ketosis and consuming fats has been so beneficial, because it's not necessarily triggering mTOR? So if you're only eating fats, then you're triggering autophagy?
Yeah, for sure. Because most people out there have high insulin. Their body's producing more insulin than they need at a, you know, given time. And that's particularly because we're constantly consuming higher carbohydrate foods, or we have chronic stress. And so one way the body adapts to the chronic stress. And so going on a very low carb diet, a ketogenic, high fat, high healthy fat diet, will help to lower that insulin. And that's really important, because insulin is a driver of this building process. It tells the body build, and it's really a dominant hormone. When insulin is elevated, it overpowers pretty much every other hormone in the body. And it just says we're in building mode, so we're not going to burn fat. We are going to build tissue. And in general, you know, it certainly can help promote increased muscle tissue. But if we have high insulin all day, we are going to promote a lot of fat tissue. And so, and obviously we're not going to be able to break down fat. We're also going to promote inflammation, because insulin tells the body activate these different genetic pathways that amplify inflammation. We call them the inflammasome and the neuroinflammasome in the brain. And so we want to quiet down inflammation, and we want to quiet down that building process, and we want to burn fat for fuel. So keeping insulin down most of the day is very, very important. And ketogenic diet basically, in a sense, gives us many of the benefits of fasting, because we're going to get that insulin suppression. Now, it will definitely help, like kind of like exercise pushes the slinky, you know, it cocks the slinky on it for mTOR. A ketogenic diet won't necessarily stimulate mTOR, because we're still eating, we're still going to be consuming typically enough food to block autophagy, I should say. So we're not going to get autophagy if we're eating, let's say, three meals a day or whatever it is, breakfast, lunch, dinner on a ketogenic diet, but it's going to cock the slinky for autophagy, as opposed to, you know, a standard American diet or a higher carbohydrate diet. That's not going to do anything. In fact, you know, it's going to make us further. It's like lengthening the slinky, right? It pulls us further away from getting autophagy. So the ketogenic diet helps to cock the slinky. And then when we also implement intermittent fasting with that, now we're going to get really good activation of autophagy.
So I used to, when I first learned of fasting, which is funny, I mean, it's like, you know, all over all kinds of religions and biblically and stuff like that. But when really actually like, you know, learned of it away from the three square meals a day type of thing, I'd feel like I was getting hungry and I would take just a spoonful of coconut oil. Now, coconut oil is pure fat. So that, because there's no carbs, there's no protein, that would potentially, I mean, that could give me some energy with the MCTs, but it wouldn't trigger mTOR. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're not going to get an mTOR. You know, we'll get a little bit of an insulin release, but not a big jump. So okay. In general with autophagy, it's still an evolving science, right? There's so many ideas out there without, you know, fully adequate science on it. And I think, you know, over the next 5 years, we'll learn a lot more about when, you know, how long we need to fast, things like that in order to really activate autophagy. However, you know, in general, you know, consuming little to no calories. Okay. If you do consume calories, I typically say under 20 calories, you know, would be ideal for really getting autophagy during your intermittent fast. Now, taking the coconut oil will still give you benefit as opposed to, you know, eating a full meal, because you'll still get, in a sense, you'll have fats that are going to help produce ketones. Ketones themselves have a dramatic effect. So in our body, we've got these elevated ketones. They're epigenetic influencers. So they're going to switch on positive gene expressions. And the positive gene expressions are going to basically, you know, help your body to have better overall function, better overall disease prevention, also downregulate inflammatory gene pathways, all kinds of stuff like that. So you'll still get a lot of benefit, and those ketones will provide a fuel source for the brain. And typically when the brain is lacking glucose, it needs this continual supply. When it's lacking that and your body doesn't have ketones, enough ketones to fuel it, to fuel the brain, then it's your body's going to go into fight or flight and panic mode. And that can cause all the different hypoglycemic types of responses, heart arrhythmias, dizziness, fainting, irritability, trembling, sweating, right? All those types of symptoms that people get, the classic hangry. And so by doing the coconut oil, it's going to allow you to extend the fast. Now, the cool thing is, let's say you're doing an extended fast and, you know, you needed some coconut oil, or you needed, you know, even just a, you know, very, very small meal. Okay. You're over time, if you do this, you know, for let's say 5 days on a partial fast, eating a very small amount, ideally more fats and like green vegetables or, you know, basically low carbohydrate, low protein foods, and under eating in general. So maybe eating, you know, somewhere between whatever 200, you know, 1,000 or so calories for that period of time, you're going to get pretty good stimulation of autophagy. Because so if you're doing it like during an intermittent fast, for example, like a bulletproof coffee, which is really popular, you're not going to get the level of autophagy that we really need, because that's going to blunt it. If you're just doing a bulletproof coffee in the morning and then you have lunch and then you eat dinner, you're going to blunt a high level of autophagy, unfortunately. You're still going to get a lot of benefits, still a lot better than, you know, eating pancakes for breakfast, right? Or something like that. But so I'm not knocking it from the perspective that it can be a really helpful tool for people, but you're just not going to get the level of autophagy you need. However, if all you did was bulletproof coffee for 5 days in a row, you would get, you know, a pretty high level of autophagy. Does that make sense, Jay?
Yeah, that'd be a lot of coffee too.
Well, so, I mean, like one cup or so, you know what I mean?
So if I want to trigger autophagy and I'm intermittent fasting and I'm going, you know, 18 hours, like you said, does black coffee throw you out, or is that pretty safe?
Good question. So it's going to be unique to the individual. Okay. In general, the research on coffee and caffeine in general is taken in, you know, the right dosage. It's going to stimulate more autophagy. It's going to ramp up autophagy. Okay. Also, the caffeic acid, chlorogenic acid that are in coffee, in the coffee bean, helps stimulate autophagy as well. However, you and I both have seen many people who they take coffee and they feel jittery. They have cravings. They have a poor response to it. Okay. And it may just be the type of coffee, or it may be them. They may be a slow caffeine metabolizer. if that's you, like if you don't feel better, if you drink coffee, black coffee, you should feel a lot better over the next 2 hours. There's really no reason to drink coffee if you don't feel better after you drink it, right? Most coffee drinkers are like, I feel great after I drink coffee, you know? If you don't, if you feel worse, then it's not helping you. It's actually driving you further away from autophagy. So just base it off how your body feels and responds to it.
That makes total sense. I almost wonder if people feel bad too with coffee, if they're backed up with like phase two detox, because I believe coffee triggers the cytochrome P450 phase one liver. So maybe they just need more attention in the liver, but I completely agree. This is awesome info. I love how we can talk about mTOR and autophagy and basically boil it down to building or cleansing. And essentially then the takeaway message, if I got this right, is the more cleansing when we are adults, the better it is for immune system.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. We really want more like a minimum 2-to-1 cleansing to building. Okay. Ideally, if we can get our body metabolically flexible enough, and for some individuals, maybe up to like a 4-to-1 cleansing to building phase, you know, either on a daily basis or just let's say on a monthly basis by doing, you know, a 5-day fast, for example, once a month or once every other month, you know, and that's typically what I'll do is, you know, if the individual is really looking to lose weight, they've got chronic disease, we might do an extended fast to really ramp up autophagy, or a partial fast, like we were talking about, fasting mimicking diet type thing, every month or two. Okay. If they are already very, very lean, okay, then maybe just doing intermittent fasting on a regular basis, okay, 3 to maybe up to 7 days a week would be really, really helpful. And possibly doing like a 5-day fast once or twice a year.
Awesome. Such great advice. Dr. Jockers, I really appreciate you joining me here for the Viral Retroviral Summit. It's been just awesome to interview you and pick your brain today.
Well, it's always a privilege and an honor, Dr. J, and really excited for this summit. I think it's going to help so many people. So thanks for putting it on.
Thank you. Well, thank you for listening to this interview of the Viral and Retroviral Summit. Make sure to please share this with your friends and loved ones as they're depending on you. And also take this home and own it for your library. Just click the banner beside or below. And don't forget to visit Dr. David Jockers. If you haven't been to his website, you probably have, you just didn't realize it. It's drjockers.com. Dr. is D-R, Jockers is J-O-C-K-E-R-S. .com. He has a wealth of information, really well written. Highly recommend to check it out. Maximum blessings. This is Dr. J. Davidson.